This is Party on the Peninsulas, your weekly update on the people and policies leading Michigan, with Michigan Democratic Party Chair Lavora Barnes.
Welcome back to Party on the Peninsulas. I'm Lavora Barnes. The word this week, anniversaries. Saturday marked the 14th anniversary of the signature achievement of the Obama administration, enactment of the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare. Republicans rampaged against the legislation, calling it the potential death knell for the U.S. healthcare system, raising the specter of government death panels deciding who lives and who dies, and predicting it would mean you could no longer choose your doctors. President Obama fought for the law, knowing it could mean he'd be a one-term president. Today in America, the Affordable Care Act is more popular than ever, and coverage is more affordable than ever. There are more than 100 million Americans, friends, family, neighbors, people you love, who can no longer be denied coverage because of a pre-existing condition. More than 45 million Americans have health coverage thanks to the Affordable Care Act, and millions of seniors have lower prescription drug costs. The Biden administration is expanding the benefits of the ACA, with the new ability of Medicare to negotiate prescription costs. The law has special meaning in Michigan. The first national healthcare bill was introduced in 1943 by Congressman John Dingell Sr. After his death, the law was reintroduced every session on his birthday by his son, John Dingell Jr. When President Obama signed the law in 2010, John Dingell Jr. was seated next to the president and presented with the first pen used to make the law official. Today, Debbie Dingell is working side by side with President Biden to expand healthcare access even further. In a hot mic moment, Vice President Biden famously called it a big blanking deal. It still is. But if Donald Trump and extreme MAGA Republicans in Congress get their way, they will gut the Affordable Care Act and rip away healthcare from millions, just like they tried to do in 2017. As we approach the fall election, it's important to remember that all of the Republican U.S. Senate candidates are enemies of the ACA. Mike Rogers, Peter Meyer, Sandy Pensler, and Justin Amash have all vowed to gut the Affordable Care Act, which would result in millions of Michiganders being denied health care access and increased costs for families. During the most recent enrollment period, more than 418,000 Michiganders signed up for affordable health care coverage. A repeal of the Affordable Care Act means 1.3 million Michiganders would lose their insurance, and about 1.8 million with pre-existing health conditions could lose critical protections. Saturday was also a special anniversary for 323 Michigan families. It was their 10th wedding anniversary. Theirs were the first same-sex weddings in Michigan history. It is also a part of the legacy of Attorney General Dana Nessel. In 2014, Nessel successfully argued for the plaintiffs in Dubois v. Snyder, which challenged Michigan's ban on the statewide legal recognition of same-sex marriage. The case was eventually combined with others and appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States, which led to the nationwide legal recognition of same-sex marriage. Another benefit of that legal effort, Nessel met her wife Alana McGuire while they were both working on the case. She proposed to McGuire in 2015 outside of the United States Supreme Court. This week will be remembered for the enactment of another pro-family law, a statute protecting surrogacy births and in vitro fertilization. We will be joined in a moment by the primary sponsor of the new laws, Representative Samantha Steckloff. The bills are a long overdue win for reproductive rights and would-be parents who can't conceive on their own. They not only safeguard the rights of biological parents, but also prioritize the protection and the reproductive freedom of those surrogates. But first, a summary of some of the week's other political and policy news with MDP's Dorian Tyus.
The state's unemployment rate dropped to 3.9% in February, and the state's labor force grew by 1.9% year over year, nearly triple the rate at which the national labor force grew over the same period of time. Governor Whitmer reacted to the strong economic news by stating that she and her partners in the Michigan legislature will keep working together to grow and diversify our economy by focusing on the kitchen table issues that make a real difference in people's lives. Speaker of the House Joe Tate said, "The news demonstrates that the Democratic agenda of putting people first, smart new policies combined with targeted budget investments is working." The House Speaker noted that he and fellow lawmakers know that times are tough for many individuals and families across the state. which is why Democrats are going to remain steadfast in their commitment to lower costs and create jobs so that all Michiganders have the freedom to afford necessities and have some financial breathing room too. Michigan has been ranked second in the nation for election administration by the Elections Performance Index, released by the MIT Election Data and Science Lab. For the 2022 midterm elections, Michigan scored 88% on the EPI, which provides an objective measure of the election performance of every state for federal elections. In the last midterm election measured by the EPI in 2018, Michigan ranked 31st with a score of 74%. And in the last federal election in 2020, Michigan was ranked 7th with a score of 87%. Attorney General Dana Nessel has joined with 15 state attorneys general and the U.S. Justice Department in a civil antitrust lawsuit against Apple for monopolization or attempted monopolization of smartphone markets. The complaint, filed in the United States District Court for the District of New Jersey, alleges that Apple illegally maintains a monopoly over smartphones by selectively imposing contractual restrictions on developers to extract more money from consumers, developers, content creators, artists, publishers, small businesses, and merchants, among others. A bipartisan effort is underway in the Michigan House of Representatives to encourage safe, clean, and reliable nuclear energy generation in the state. Democratic State Representatives Joey Andrews, Mike McFaul, and Samantha Steckloff have joined with two Republican legislators to introduce a comprehensive plan promoting the development of modern nuclear energy technology in Michigan by defining advanced nuclear reactor, also known as small modular reactors, in state law and clarifying siting requirements. Establish a nuclear and hydrogen education grant. Encourage innovation in the nuclear energy field through a manufacturing tax credit aimed at incentivizing and supporting qualified research and development expenses. Establish a fund for educational grants program and establish a workforce attraction and retention scholarship program. The new leader of the Michigan Republican Party says his administration is having trouble taking control of the state GOP's website and tracking down computers that are reportedly worth $113,000. In an interview with the Detroit News, Michigan Republican Party Chairman Pete Hoekstra said Friday that his team had been receiving zero cooperation from some supporters of former Chairwoman Christina Karamo. It's also unclear when Hoekstra's administration will get full control over the Michigan Republican Party's longtime website and its official Twitter handle. As of Friday, the website didn't list Hoekstra on its leadership page and still featured at least one photo of Karamo. Hoekstra said there had been a total lack of cooperation from Karamo's team and its vendors. Links to these and other stories are on our website, partyonthepeninsulas.com. From Michigan Democratic Party headquarters in Lansing, I'm Dorian Tyatt.
Joining the podcast this week is the primary sponsor of legislation, which will put into law the recognition and protection of surrogacy and in vitro fertilization. Oakland County Representative Samantha Steckloff's bills are a long overdue win for reproductive rights and would-be parents who can't conceive on their own. They not only safeguard the rights of biological parents, but also prioritize the protection and the reproductive freedom of those surrogates. Representative Steckloff is serving her second term representing Michigan's 19th House District. A lifelong resident of Farmington Hills, Representative Steckloff has been a consistent and tenacious leader on the issues that impact her communities, as well as the state of Michigan as a whole. She was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 31, which has given her a unique understanding of the need to reform health insurance so no person will go broke battling a life-threatening disease. For her, the protection of surrogacy and IVF was a personal mission. She talked with our Walt Sorg about the legislation.
Representative Steckloff, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. This legislation that you have sent to the governor's desk, it really eliminates a lot of barriers to parenthood for a lot of people in the state.
Yeah, well, currently right now, Michigan is the only state left that has a criminal ban on surrogacy in their contracts. And this was put into place in 1988. So right when assisted reproduction technology was really starting to come out and these laws were made, well before we could have seen what these medical advancements were able to do. So in the state of Michigan, it's very difficult and it puts us in a really weird place where people now have to adopt their children through any assisted reproduction. So for instance, if you were to go through surrogacy, because the contracts are illegal, you would have to adopt your children. And we're seeing that quite often. We have a family out in Western Michigan who got a lot of attention, the Myers family. I'm very close with Tammy, actually. We were at the same cancer camp in 2016 together. So we have a very long history with breast cancer and really raising each other up. But she wasn't able to get her children to adopt her children until right before their second birthday. They were born prematurely, which is where a very difficult problem lies, because if you're not on the birth certificate, who's making those decisions? Right now, the surrogate. What happens if they go into the NICU, which happened exactly to them? Who makes those decisions? So it was a very difficult process. And we're seeing this in a lot of assisted reproduction, not necessarily with IVF, depending on how you go through IVF. If you're using, let's just say, a donor sperm or donor egg, because it's not biologically yours, then you would also have to adopt. What happens in postmortem? Who has the right to inheritance? Who goes on these birth certificates? So this is streamlining the process of a child through parentage. And that's why these bills are so family-oriented and child-oriented. Because people are being born in this state through assisted reproduction, and those children just do not have the security and safeguards that they deserve.
If someone were just looking at the headlines about this going through and getting to the governor's desk, people might assume this is a direct response to what happened in Alabama with that insane court ruling.
Yeah.
But really, this is something you've been working on literally for years.
Yeah, I started working on this. It was a passion project of mine before I was elected to the state government. And once I was elected in 2020, started really putting pen to paper. I've been working on this for quite some time. We actually put this in the House back in November, and I wouldn't say it was bipartisan. Every single Republican House member voted against it. Many of them voted against their own self-interest, but that's another story for another time. So that was done in November, and Alabama just happened. Interesting to see how sometimes you're put in a position where you were already working on something and now it gets the attention that a bill package actually deserves. And I think that's what pushed some Senate members to vote yes, because now IVF is a conversation.
I'm looking at a story right now from ABC News that was published just a few days ago. The headline on it is How IVF and Abortion Access Could Shape the 2024 Election. Did you anticipate this becoming such a partisan dividing line that could impact the elections?
Interesting to see how sometimes you're put in a position where you were already working on something and now it gets the attention that a bill package actually deserves. And I think that's what pushed some Senate members to vote yes, because now IVF is a conversation.
One of the things that occurred to me as I was reading about the progress that you've been making with this bill is what a difference it makes, especially in the state house, where a majority of the Democratic caucus is women. You know, 15, 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't quite that way. Has the improvement in the numbers of the House of Representatives, and especially in the caucus, made this fight a little easier for you?
Interesting question, because a lot happened at the same time. First trifecta in over 40 years. Majority female caucus in both the House, majority female caucus of the majority, hopefully I said that right, in the House and in the Senate. So a lot of stuff in Lansing is changing, but I think that has to do with a few factors. You'll see a lot of legislation like surrogacy and IVF legislation that maybe you wouldn't have seen under more of a male majority, but it's hard to say because it is the first Dem trifecta. And so I think it's really more has to do with the that point of view that we're finally able to work on issues that have been so pressing for so many years. You also have to remember when this was signed into law in 1988, the ban on surrogacy, it was actually done by a Democratic governor.
One of the arguments that was being used against your bill from Republicans was that it could result in the exploitation of young women who were desperate for money. Do you see that as a real concern or just something that's mostly imaginary?
Oh, it's a complete boogeyman, especially in the United States. So everything I talk about is going to be about our country, the United States, because I can't affect anything that happens overseas. And it's not just in surrogacy. A lot of the issues you're finding in some of the conversations of selling of babies and things like that. A lot of countries are also working on their adoption process because they're running into the same issues. And again, like I want to say, those are all overseas. In the country, we're the last state to bring this to fruition. And you haven't heard of any cases in the entire country since the 80s when assisted reproduction was first created. But we wanted to make sure that any of that conversation was addressed. That is why in this bill package, as the gestational surrogate, you have to be at least 21 years of age. You have to have gone through extensive mental health backgrounds, and you've had to already have had a child. And that's very important because you need to be able to understand what your body is going through and how the process works. So we addressed a lot of those issues as a just in case type thing, but no, we haven't seen any cases in the United States. And this is actually supported by Mothering Justice. We have a lot of those organizations who have come out in support of this bill package.
It seems like your bill is the capstone of a year of getting government out of healthcare decisions.
Yes, exactly.
Representative Steckloff, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Congratulations on a really good piece of legislation, making it all the way through the process.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. This has been a labor of love. Get it, labor. It has been my baby. Here, we'll throw in another one. So it is. My staff and I are still in disbelief that we're here where we are. Alabama did highlight this bill package, something that wasn't expected. So blessed that everyone in the state of Michigan will now be able to create their family under their terms and no longer have to worry about government interference.
Representative Samantha Steckloff of Oakland County, thank you again for being with us.
This week's Trump outrage, his latest anti-Semitic outburst.
Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel. And they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel would be destroyed.
Here's how the Times of Israel reported on the Trump outburst. To many Jewish leaders in a demographic that has overwhelmingly identified as Democratic and supported U.S. President Joe Biden in 2020, Trump's latest comments promoted harmful anti-Semitic stereotypes, painting Jews as having divided loyalties and that there's only one right way to be Jewish religiously. The Times goes on to quote Rabbi Rick Jacobs, president of the Union for Reform Judaism, the largest U.S. Jewish religious denomination, who said, "That escalation of rhetoric is so dangerous, so divisive, and so wrong. This is a moment when Israel needs there to be more bipartisan support." Before we close, a quick preview of an upcoming event with political importance statewide. The Michigan Democratic Party's Rural Caucus will host a two-day rural summit, looking at what Democrats need to do to earn greater support from rural voters. Speakers will include Senator Debbie Stabenow, who chairs the U.S. Senate Agriculture Committee, Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, and Democratic National Committee pollster Shalinda Lake. We'll have more details on next week's podcast when we're joined by Rural Caucus Chair Mark Ludwig. That's this week's report from your Michigan Democratic Party. I'm Lavora Barnes. Thank you for listening.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic Party, 606 Townsend, Lansing, Michigan, 48933.